Excuse me, recording has started. You may now proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the second GNSOE PDP team meeting taking place on August the 7th, 2018 at 1300 UTC, scheduled for 2 hours. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no one, we shall elicit apologies from Barzane Body from NCSG, Georgios Telesis from GAC, and Thomas Rickert from the ISPCP. They have formally assigned the alternates of Colin Curry and Chris Lewis Evans. During this period, the members, alternates will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members return. As a reminder, the alternate assignment must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form, link available in the agenda pod. All documents and information can be found on the EPDP wiki space, and there is an audio cast for non-members to follow the call. Please remember to state your name before speaking, and recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public wiki space shortly after the call's end. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks very much, and thanks everybody for attending and being here for the on-time start. There's quite a lot to do. I just want to touch on a few administrative things before we get into the substance. First is a possible face-to-face meeting. So it's not confirmed yet, but the most favorable dates for us would be September 24th through 28th. That's a Monday through Wednesday, so the meeting would either be 3 days or 2.5 days, and most likely to be located in Los Angeles because it is a short lead time notice for the meetings team, and Los Angeles is the only one of the ICANN facilities that has sufficient space to house a group this big, and also have room for breakout sessions and the like. So that's where we are. We're not able to confirm that, so don't make travel arrangements yet, but we're working towards that. So in 2H, pencil on your calendar, mark those dates. The second thing I want to mention is that requests for early information that we described in the last meeting were sent out to the leaders of each supporting organization and advisory committee and their sub-constituencies and stakeholder groups. And as we discussed last time, this early input is sort of redundant with the survey we're doing and the work that this group is doing, in that we have just about everybody in the ICANN community represented. So my advice is that the early input is not a last bite at the apple in any sense, and that, you know, take advantage of providing any writing you want, but you're providing similar writings in the survey, and by participating here, we're merely complying with the GNSO PDB process requirements. Finally, in the last meeting, we talked about the vice chair position, and emails from Alan Greenberg and others sort of opened a door, a path for us for resolving any issues with Rafiq Damek being named the vice chair. And the chair of the GNSO Council has chimed in and agreed to help resolve issues with reporting conflict. So I'm going to take one more meeting cycle, which is 2 days, to put those agreements in writing so everybody can see them and agree that Rafiq would be suitable as chair. So, and resolve the remaining issues associated with that. That's the administrative part of the meeting. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
My audio is working.
See, what this group is really moving along, Milton. We're improving all the time. Ashley? Oh, Alan?
Thank you. Just one other point, and I'm not sure what the right venue is to bring it up. We've got one alternate who has bad connectivity, and I'd like to try to arrange dial-out capabilities for him on the audio channel or something, because otherwise his internet connectivity is not sufficient to actually maintain the audio stream at times. So if we can talk offline on it and just discuss how we can perhaps try to fix that.
Okay, and the alternate can't listen to the audio stream because of the poor connectivity?
That's correct.
All right, so I think that can be accommodated. So that's fine with me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ashley, I was told you had your hand raised, did you?
Yes, it was raised, but my question was answered in the chat. Thank you.
Okay, terrific. Thanks. Okay, so let's get into the substance of the matter, and that is the initial feedbacks everybody's given on the first part of the survey. So first, let me congratulate, kind of condescending, but thank you very much for the thought and consideration that went into your responses. I found the rationale to be in nearly all cases very helpful. And will be a good tool to carry the conversation forward. So the work you did here will not only apply to this triage stage, but will be very helpful later on. So from about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon until sometime last night, the I can't support, and to a certain extent me. And to a certain extent, me, besides the task of collating all the data, we discussed how we could best display this information in a way that we could run this meeting in an efficient way and make things and issues very clear to you. So we labored at that. I think we probably failed. so the meeting will be a little bit awkward because there's just so much information and little tiny screens. So, and I don't have a couple screens up in front of me like I should. And if you don't, my advice is to, have a printout of the temporary specification in one hand. And there's these slides that will point up issues. But what's really helpful, too, is if you can look at the spreadsheet that is the collation of all the comments and then sort of a summary comment to those, because that's what we're gonna discuss. So that spreadsheet that was sent around last night is really the gist of our discussion today. There's parts of that are summarized at a high level on these slides, and then from time to time you're gonna want to point to the temporary specification. So I know that's a little bit tricky, and any suggestions you have going forward for how to run this discussion will be greatly appreciated. So to the extent you can, bear with us and contribute, and any ideas you have will be very welcome. So I came away with six takeaways from this first exercise. First, as those of you who have looked at the slides and the information can tell, there's not consensus for supporting most of the sections of the temporary specification. I think the rationale and reasoning provided in the comments provide a path for discussion, but it's pretty clear right now there's not that consensus in most places. There's a lack of consensus in most places, if I said that the right way. But I think the rationale you provided did point a way forward for us. And, I'm embarrassed to say I can now quote the section numbers of the temporary specification without looking them up. But we seem to say, let's focus on these legitimate purposes for the use and disclosure of registration data, those 13 items that are listed, 4.4.1 through 4.4.13. Let's look at those first, and then that'll help us in the discussion that, you know, what I call is the rationale, you know, that describes ICANN's role in this and the importance of this to internet stability while minimizing risk to the participants in this discussion. So those sections are 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, and 4.5. And I think what I took away from the rationale is that if we solve the case of those legitimate purposes section first, then a lot of the rationale issues fall away. And maybe, you know, to me, I don't know what, you know, maybe we don't even need the rationale. We just need the specification itself. And so this rationale will also provide a basis for, after we're done with this triage, to kick off the discussion. And so the third takeaway was, given the lack of consensus, I think we should get over this triage section right away. I think I had a fond dream that there would be some minor differences on some points and we'd discuss them, find a resolution, so we'd pick another box where there's consensus. But given I don't think that's possible, so I think it's important for us to make a triage report to the GNSO and then get into the heavy lifting work right away. So I think the as far as the triage report will go, I think you guys are writing it. So the writing you've done in the survey will, you know, you can go back and amend it if you want, but it's going to form the basis of the triage report to the GNSO Council. And so to me, what's left then is for us to create some summary of the issues, so sort of a bridge. So here's the high level, you know, report on who's for sections and who is against sections, that one page colored page, and then all the detail that you've provided. So what the staff and I have done overnight is take on a first whack at creating sort of a description of, you know, of a winnowing, sort of a winnowing down of the issue in each case that is intended to be neutral, as I said in my email. So the purpose of this meeting is really going to be that, to discuss that. How do we describe the issue on each section for the GNSO Council and finish off this triage report and then get back to work? And finally, as we said in the last meeting, the schedule that we created was very ambitious and probably over ambitious. And the amount of work that you put into this first go around proved the point that so we're amending the schedule somewhat. So I've read everybody's emails, although I miss them from time to time. So if I don't respond to your email, find some other way to reach me. But so the next section will be due on Friday rather than Wednesday. But we still want to hold the final date of August 19th because we want to get this triage section over with. But the last section is very brief, so we think that'll be okay. So those are my six realizations for the exercise. I think, you know, I'm going to go through one more slide and then pause for comments. So here's my suggested path forward. So this triage is intended to be an abbreviated process that just indicates the degree of consensus on the separate sections of the temporary specification. And as we said, the initial indications of that the consensus is low. But we don't want that fact to delay the triage report, which will in turn delay the initial report that we have to do. So for the triage, we intend to deliver the summary of responses. That should be responses indicating the level of support of each group. So that's in the slide deck and in this spreadsheet that you received. Then we'll deliver each of the comments that's in the matrix. So we'll put them in better form. And then we want to have some issue summarization, some bridge between, you know, the summary of responses and the detail in the issue. And that's I think that would be a good purpose for our meeting today. So we'll spend this meeting and the next couple meetings sharing comments, points of view on the various sections. And, you know, hopefully it's a really bad strategy, but, I've suggested some neutral wording that certainly needs to be wordsmith because it was done kind of late, that sort of describes the issue in each case. And then that's what I think the triage report is going to be for us, those three things. And in our initial schedule, we had allotted 2 weeks to put together the triage report. I hope if the last section is due on August 19th, we could finish as early as about 2.5 weeks from now. So I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions or comments with that plan. So that's a really bad sign. Okay, so.
Did you see my name on the Adobe?
Cavus, is that you?
Yes, I put my name. I raised my hand about some 5 minutes ago.
I'm so sorry, I don't see it, but go ahead, please.
Yes, Chef. First of all, the list of the attendants is not actually represented. We only see two persons. Kabul Saraste and Christopher Wilkinson, two only. And I don't see any slide on the page. And I think that you do not see my hand raised 5 minutes ago. So no problem. You said about the next meeting. Are you talking of next meeting, which was planned for Thursday? Now it is Friday. Could you please confirm that? And then
yes.
The second question is that, yes, it's Friday, right?
No, keep going. What's your second question?
So, what is our next meeting, third meeting, on Thursday 9 or Friday 10? Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. And I don't see you in the room. I think you're on audio only. So, if he's with Christopher Wilkinson, you're probably in the wrong room. Can you send the link to Cavus? So in answer to your question, the next meeting is Thursday, as scheduled, at 1300 UTC. The date for the submission of the next round in the survey will be due Friday at the close of, end of the day.
Yes, I thank you very much. That is really helpful because in the GAC small team, we spent 2 hours and 40 minutes to coordinate our views in order to send you something which is already coordinated among the GAC members. So we try to do the same thing, but it takes a lot of time. So thank you very much for shifting to Friday. So give us a little bit more time. But please kindly consider that. I have not yet agreed with 2 times per week after 21st of August. The schedule is just 21st of August. After that, I have not yet confirmed that because it is too much. It's really too much, and there's a lot of books. We have to put all our time for this EPDP. We have many other ICANN applications. So we have to miss everything for that. So please kindly reconsider to come back to the schedule of the meeting after 21st of August. Thank you. And please show the list of participants. I don't see anyone except Christopher. Yes, and one more. And that's all. And then the slide is not shown on the screen. So please kindly tell the people to update the Adobe room. Thank you.
Yeah, Pebbles, would you please check your email and look for a link there and find the Adobe room where we're all hiding from you? And thanks for your comment, and thanks for the I've got to say this, thanks for the time the GAC members spent on the report. And I thought it was excellent, so I appreciate what was done. All right, so here's the summary of responses. I don't have much to say about this. That reading the comments, the RYSG is read primarily because they thought some sort of reset was in order given the recent letters we received from the EDPB. Is that how you say that? And so they didn't disagree with, on a point-by-point basis, but thought a reset was in order. I've got to say, too, that, in certain cases where only one party was against a certain topic, I found that argument really persuasive. So, it points up the need for our discussion and consensus building. But there's the chart, and it's in your spreadsheet and also in your slide deck. So here's what I'm thinking, and this for those of you who have seen the slide before, who've opened them up, might have divined some inkling. But we members of the ICANN support staff and I read through each of the comments, and then for each of the questions, we tried to divine in an objective way what people were focused on or what the next step should be. And admittedly, this whole, this was done in about 3 hours' time, this writing. So there's some holes in it, but I offer it for your consideration. So I don't know exactly how to go about this, but here's my idea. So instead of taking it section by section, I sort of group them in groups of three or four, because if we talk about each question, we would be at this for, through the Barcelona meeting. So what I want to do is let you, I hope you have your temporary specification out and you're looking at the spreadsheet with all the comments. And, read the issue summary, and then we want to kind of say this is what I want to stick on the front of your comments as the triage document. And it'll be a little bit better put, but this would be essentially it. And like I said, there might be mistakes in here. So what I like to do is take them three or four at a time, in this case three, for, section one, two, and three of the temporary spec. And this is how I've characterized the issue. So, for example, first one, the clause that says, if there's a conflict between the temporary spec and other portions of the agreement, the temporary spec will prevail. And then it goes on to say, unless ICANN determines in its reasonable discretion that this temporary specification shall not control, is problematic. So many found that clause to be problematic. And then the other realization we came to was that we didn't understand why that clause was there. Is it because there wasn't time to read through the contract carefully and discover if there were conflicts, or is it there because there might be some eventuality where there's a development in the GDPR or how it's enforced that would change things? So I don't know. So here's what I'd like to do. So that was the issue with Section 1. And Section 2, there's a definition of the interim model and hopefully we won't have an interim model soon. So maybe that should go away, and the definition of registration data could be punched up a bit, it was thought. And then on the policy effective date, if we're working on the regular specification, then that's going to go away, but that's not a big issue. So what I want to do is let you look at this for a minute, and then we'll go around the virtual room as we decided we would, and see if anybody has any comments on these. And let me say that, you know, given that we're all looking at this with 5 minutes notice, we'll also use the time, say, between now and the next meeting or even the meeting after that to allow people to raise issues with how these how these summaries are written. So this isn't your last bite at the apple, but I think this is the best use of our time. So I'm going to call on James, and then we'll see if he has a process comment or a substantive comment. And then, you know, I'd like to hear from one person in each group. So, James, if you want to go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking for the record, and hopefully you can hear me. Just wanted to give your voice a break there for a minute. So I have a substantive question, but I think it's an easy one. In Section 3, one of my comments, and I think it was included with the registrar comments, is that the effective date of the temporary spec is the 25th of May, but it was adopted by the board on the 17th, and I would hope that in a perfect world those 8 days won't make a difference. But I would just like some clarity from ICANN staff that that the 25th is in fact the expiry date for the temporary spec and not the 17th. Of 2019. Thanks.
Yes. So, good news is we're blessed with the presence of Dan Halloran, who's going to be our liaison from the ICANN legal staff, and Trang Nguyen from GDD is going to be our liaison from GDD. So, thanks for the break. And Dan, if you could take that on board and come back to us with an email, that'd be terrific. Thanks, Dan. Stephanie?
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin for the record. Just going back to the previous section on the matter of ICANN amending the spec, so that would be section 1.1, there is a question about in there, you know, does that mean unless the board in its wisdom decides, and I realize there's detail in the temporary spec about changing it subject to a court decision, advice from data protection authorities, and so on, but the precise process for that, you know, does it have to go through a GNSO process, et cetera, is unclear. So I think that would be useful. Thank you.
Thanks for that. And I don't know if this was exactly what you're saying or not, but in addition to that, you know, the first 90 days is about up, and we might be seeing an amendment to the temporary spec. Does anybody are people generally, these are the simplest of the issues, so we're starting with them, but I can call on people or you know, if anybody from the BC or IPC or ISPs or registries want to speak on this, James?
Yeah, thanks. Just to Stephanie's point about any amendments at the 90-day intervals, I think we should, because this group is underway and we're addressing this temporary spec directly, I think it would be wise for us to ask and to receive some assurances that if the board were making amendments or considering any amendments to the temporary spec, that we would be aware of that in advance.
So I think that's a good point. And I think from a process perspective, Marika, I think we'll just capture these questions and then send them on to ICANN. We won't. I'd rather capture them in writing and send them rather than just hand them off to Dan or Trang without some sort of writing. So if we can capture that and make that part of our actions, that'd be good. Caboose, you're in the room.
Yes, I have a general comment about the GDPR. What we reply now is the existing or present or current GDPR. Any changes in future, we do not engage in any future changes without having the possibility to comment. So it should not be taken granted that every or any comment we made covers the future changes of the GDPR. This is one point. And the other point, which is major point, as is discussed in our group, is that GDPR is not the only data protection system or measures or whatever you want. There are others as well. We don't want to go to unlimited, but at least one thing is important is the national data protection legislation of the country. We do not want that that will be subordinated by the GDPR. We respect GDPR, and we do our best to align ourselves in the GDPR. In fact, 10 days ago in our country, we have now drafted the national data protection, and now it is in the parliament. It's based on the GDPR, existing one, with some changes. But we do not want that our national legislation data protection system be subordinated by the GDPR. That is very important for us. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that was in the gist of the statement that Ashley sent on, that you know, our work has to be cognizant of other privacy measures that are going on. Milton?
Yes. I just want to make a comment about this clause, unless I can determine it as reasonable discretion. It's true we don't know why ICANN put that in there, and I guess we should hear that. But as I read the comments, it sounds like this, we actually do have consensus on that, that nobody likes that clause. Am I incorrect? And if that's the case, and we could chalk that up as something that we have consensus on, which probably will make you happy, Kurt. Could we not?
No, you can't make me happy. I think so, and I think we're at consensus, but I think there's some people didn't comment on it. So, you know, when we get to the discussion on the initial report, this is going to be the very first issue discussed, and you know, the pin we'll put in the wall is that this would come out in the next version of this specification. So thanks for that, Milton. Excellent. Margie?
Hi, Kurt. This is Margie. Can you guys hear me okay?
Perfect.
Wait. Okay, great. On Section 3, the policy effective date, I just wanted to flag that, and you'll see it in some of the BC comments, that when we talk about when something needs to be done, in the temporary spec, it's, say, whatever, 6 months or whatever the date is from the temporary spec. But as we work on the new policy, we have to keep in mind that whatever that effective date might be a date in the future, or if we're agreeing that it's May 25th, then my issue doesn't really arise. But I'm just cognizant that we don't want to keep adding on to the period for implementation on some of the things in the temporary spec just because the date of the effectiveness moves from the 25th of May to some date in the future. So it's just kind of a general comment as we look through the rest of the things in the temporary spec.
So I think I understand. Are you suggesting that the May 25th expiration might move out?
No, I just, I'm merely saying that in the temporary spec, there's timelines, right? So it might say, you know, in 25 days or 30 days or 90 days, whatever the time period is, we have to pay attention to when that period starts. So is it, you know, from May 25th, or is it 6 months from the date that this new policy gets adopted? As you can see, if the new policy gets adopted a year from now, it's now extended the implementation a year and a half. And so that's what I just want to make sure that we're not doing, that the implementation timelines are you know, we're paying attention to that as we work through all the issues in the temporary spec.
All right. Thank you. It's so noted. All right, so I'm going to we've captured, you know, the need for the precise expiration date here and the questions we have, and I'll punch up the problematic clause and say that, in fact, we think there's consensus that this clause will go in the next round. And somehow we, Marika and team, we have to capture comments like Margie, so we have some sort of log of things to pay attention to. So let's go on to the next part, which is a bit harder. And this is the sections in 4. And 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3 to me are the rationale for undertaking the temporary specification and laying the groundwork for the scope of the temporary specification. And then in section 4.4, we start to lay out the lawful the lawful purposes of processing GTLD registration data themselves. So what I got from sections 4.1, 4.2, and even 4.3 is there's quite a bit of difference in opinion regarding the authority granted to ICANN through the bylaws. Even the bylaws themselves were questioned in some circumstances. And let's see, some point out that it's more. But then, importantly, in these two sections, it was pointed out that you know, it's best to go ahead with the discussion on the uses and disclosure of registration data itself. That's in those sections 4.4 and on, rather than debate the rationale that's in the temporary specifications. And once we have a consensus on the appropriate uses and times of disclosure of registration data, then it would be easier to go back and address the claims made in the rationale. You know, for me, I can't help myself here, but, you know, the temporary specification to a certain extent is the thing you stick on the back of your contract that tells you what to do. And so once it's enforced, once the board's approved it, you know, we don't really need this rationale, but in the specification, but it should be captured somewhere. So let's talk about just 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, these sections that have to do with ICANN finding in its bylaws and now remit the authority past the temporary specification. And, you know, again, to a certain extent, it's moot because here it is. The temporary specification is passed. And secondly, the idea that I say here that we want to let this go until we discuss these other sections first. So my proposal in these in this light blue and green box is that these are the issue summary. So, James, can you go first?
Hey, thanks, Kurt. James speaking for the record. And first off, I should just caution that I'm not trying to derail our work, but I have a question because I know that these are very turbulent waters that we're wading into. And so my question is, before we, you know, go into these areas, should we first identify or at least discuss which determinations of lawfulness and legitimacy we can determine on our own, or which ones may be determined for us externally, like, for example, with pending court cases and such. And I'm only saying this because I think that there's a concern that we may be making some of these findings internally that might not be consistent with what's, you know, what's happening out in the real world. And I want to make sure that we're in sync before we invest a lot of work and sunk costs into that. So I want to put that out there. Do we have an agreed upon approach to how we find whether or not something is lawful?
So my answer would be no, we don't have an agreed upon approach. I think you're right, and I think we need to do that because we want to put each one of those uses through some sort of sausage grinder and process them all the same way and make sure the right considerations are given to each. What are our opinions? What are the outside influences? What authority exists so far? Those sorts of things. So at this stage, what I want to do is just capture that there's a lack of consensus on the temporary specifications and the reason, and to summarize the reasons for that have been cited for that lack of consensus, and ship that off to the GNSO and have that be our triage statement. So I think, you know, the best answer I have for you in parallel with that, anybody is welcome to suggest the sort of process you described. So that when we get into the substantive discussion, you know, 2.5 weeks from now, we'll have that process ready. And it was my intent to create that, but, you know, I might be the least well-equipped of the group to do that. I just want to follow up with James to see if that was responsive.
Yes, Kurt, thanks for the response. I think it's the best we can hope for at this point.
Yeah. Milton?
Yes, I'm also following up and building on James's comment. However, I'm not sure whether you would agree with it entirely, Kurt. So when James says, you know, ultimately the arbiter of what is a legitimate purpose for access to the data is going to be determined by the law, by case law, and by applications of the law, and that's why I think we have to deal with the rationale in sections 4.1 and 4.2, and the other stuff really shouldn't be talking about at all. That's going to be decided by the courts and the law and not by ICANN. And so what we really objected to, NCSG, in the rationale was that ICANN was defining as part of its purpose the facilitation and support for all kinds of third-party interests. And they've already been told that they're not supposed to do this by the data protection authorities. So, you know, even though in the more detailed sections 4.4, we indicate our support for certain kinds of access to the data, you know, I think our filter is based on the ideas, what is actually ICANN's purpose in collecting this data, and that relates very narrowly to its role in coordinating and maintaining the security and stability of the DNS itself, not these third-party interests. Now, I think there's a lot of confusion about this by some people in the middle who think, you know, if we say that supporting, let's say, security researchers is not part of ICANN's mission or purpose, then they think that security researchers will never get access to that data. That may or may not be true. The access will be determined ultimately by what is legal. So, for example, if law enforcement demands access to certain kinds of data, it really doesn't matter what ICANN's purpose is. The registrar will have to turn it over to them legally, and the courts will decide what's a legitimate purpose, not ICANN. When all of ICANN's discussion of purpose, in other words, in our view, should relate to ICANN's own purposes, ICANN's own mission, determining what it collects and what it displays. And then people who want to go beyond that are simply dealing with a legal question in their jurisdiction. Is that distinction clear to everybody?
So I want to hear from others, but yes, it's clear to me. And so I'll say two things. One of them is clear in my mind, and that is that's the reason why I think the NCSC, but certainly others, recommended that we talk about the sections that start with 4.4 first, that are the actual uses of the data, because that's where you apply the sort of analysis that James was talking about to say.
No, Kurt, exactly the opposite of what I'm saying. What matters here is the actual purpose of ICANN, not us specifying other uses of third parties, that we have to get the rationale first, and that the other stuff is really not going to be decided by ICANN. It really isn't. It doesn't really matter what we say, in that if we have made it clear that our purpose is a limited one consistent with ICANN's mission.
So then the second point I was going to make is less clear in my mind, and that is that overlap between ICANN's mission, the creation of the registrar marketplace, and contractual obligations, and the things that come from the multi-stakeholder model, such as, you know, the use of registration data to do legitimate things like, you know, fight crime. So that's less. So that juxtaposition and how that works is less clear on my mind. But I think it's a more blurred line than you draw. But so are you suggesting we eliminate? We go through 4.1 and 4.2 and then eliminate possibly line items in the 4.4s? Is that what you're after? I don't think that's it. So that's what I'm trying to get at.
I'm saying that that's possible if we reach consensus on the rationale in a way that permits us to eliminate specific things. But it doesn't hurt if the listing is sufficiently narrow to reflect the mission of ICANN. It doesn't hurt to list things. It's when you start confusing third-party interests and purposes with ICANN's interests and purposes that I think we're in.
Okay, let's march through this queue. So, Caboose?
Yes, I put several questions in the chat, and I hope that you have little time to look at that one. First of all, I heard that someone saying that security is not part of ICANN mission. Where it is mentioned in the bylaw that security is not part of ICANN mission? Which security we are talking about? We are talking about network security or security of network or security, stability, resiliency, so on, support of the DNS. What security we are talking about that we are not part of the ICANN mission? I think we are diverting the discussion. We are going too far. We are not inside the temporary specification. We are discussing many other things. Perhaps you may kindly limit the discussion not to going outside that. My question is that, what is legitimate purpose? Who determines that the purpose is legitimate or not legitimate? What is personal data? Is there anywhere that I can find somewhere in the ICANN activities or community the list of the personal data? As I said, these are the personal data or not. So many things like this is unclear. I don't want to go to the whole list, but I put in a general sentence in the GAC reply that the many adjectives or many definitions need to be clarified where we can find them. All of them are just subjective. There is no way, there is no criteria, and there is no definition. Please can you clarify this matter. Thank you.
So can someone, so I don't have a good answer for Caboose right now. Can someone capture that and the questions he's put into the chat so we can respond in writing or later in this meeting? Okay, Stephanie, in the spirit of calling on each stakeholder group or advisory committee one time, you get to talk, but with the idea that you're going to say something different. So please go ahead.
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. And I believe that some of what I was going to raise has been brought up in the chat by Colin. I think that I'm pointing back to the RDS ill-fated PDP that failed to resolve these issues. And in my view, we would be better off if we did a good post-mortem on that exercise and understand how we went in circles for large periods of time. Part of the problem is a reluctance to accept the input that we had at that point received from the data protection authorities. Since that time, we have received quite a bit more input from the data protection authorities, and I presume that there has been input in the face-to-faces and the various lobbying efforts that ICANN has been making over the past year to get more input. But we do have the results of the Copenhagen questions and new statements and new letters from them. It would be nice if we could raise those issues, if we could consolidate those, the advice that we've received, and cut short discussion of items where, for instance, we're conflating the issues. And my colleague Colin pointed out one. Actually, Alan Woods pointed it out. I beg your pardon. In the recent EDPB letter, just so that we could curtail this stuff, because as James has pointed out, we want something that's going to stand up. None of us gain by continuing in this kind of, we used to call it in government, we'll risk manage that. It means we'll just take a chance and see if we get away with it. I think we're past that point now. We have to figure out how the data protection authorities have already opined on some of these things. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Alan?
Sorry, I thought Mark was next.
Well, Mark was next, but I screwed up, so go ahead, Alan.
Okay. I essentially wanted to say what is in the chat. You know, I do believe security is within ICANN's remit, and although we don't do it, and the real issue in my mind is unless data is collected, and we are the ones that specify what is collected, it cannot be made available to other people. And my recollection is there are provisions in the GDPR for considering third-party needs, and I think this is the crucial thing that we have to focus on and go forward on. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I'm really sorry. I kind of faded there. Go ahead, please.
That's okay. I forgive you, Kurt. I just wanted to make the comment, and it's related to Alan, I think. Milton, I understand that if something is very clearly not supported by, we would be foolish to try to jam it in and then, you know, later bring it to a court challenge. So I agree with that was the point you were making. But I also agree with Alan that, you know, no court is ever going to add more purposes, right? So all they're going to do is chip away at certain purposes in certain jurisdictions. And so if we don't make the effort right now to figure out the things that are likely to be purposes and likely to be conformant with the law, then we're really missing an opportunity to manage the security and stability of the system.
Thank you, Mark. Chris?
Thanks, Kurt. I just wanted to sort of give my view on some of Milton's points, really. So the way that I read some of the EDP, I hate this acronym, EDPB advice, is that they've told ICANN not to conflate with all the third-party stuff and its own purposes. You know, in the temp spec, there's a couple of places where it sort of says, collect data for its own mission and that of third parties. So I think what my reading of that is the EDPB is asking for ICANN to be very clear what are its purposes for collecting data and what are the purposes of third parties that require that data to be collected or the purposes for which it's processing it. So, I think as Mark just said from BC that, there is availability to process data that's already collected and, we could ask them to collect data on behalf of us as long as it fits in with our legitimate purposes and legal basis. So, it's just really trying to get any statements that we've got in the temporary spectra or anything going forward that we don't combine the third parties with ICANN's own needs. That's my real reading of the EPDP advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I think one of the tables we could put together on the administrative side is sort of a categorization of data. So what data is necessary to register and manage a domain name, what data is necessary or requested by third parties, what data is required by ICANN. So I think, and see the differences there, I think that would be a helpful sort of graphic and determine our way forward. Caboose, we've already talked. Benedict, do you want to go?
Hopefully you can hear me.
Yep, I can hear you well.
Wonderful news. So SSAC, which I represent, hasn't made any comments on this. We've broadly agreed with Section 4. There's just a couple of responses we'd like to provide to some of the comments being made. First of all, that I've just read Article 6 again of GDPR, and when I woke up again, I did spot that the legitimate interests point, which ICANN clearly is relying on very heavily in the temp spec, does allow the legitimate interests of the controller or a third party to be considered. So that is explicitly authorized within the GDPR, and as long as those purposes are not conflated, as we've been advised by the European data protection bodies, it is in our view acceptable to state those. My second point is that really in response to Milton, there's quite a sweeping statement been made by Milton, and if possible I'd like him to respond to this if we feel we have time, about what happens if ICANN doesn't or no longer has this mandate of collection and disclosure of data for law enforcement purposes. How does Milton envision that happening if ICANN is no longer in the picture? Thank you so much.
Well, I could channel, thank you very much for that comment. I could channel Milton, but do you want to answer that, Milton, in a brief way?
Do you want me to? Yeah, I'll answer it. I think that question reveals the misunderstanding that is causing about 50% of the disagreement here. First of all, you're always, to have a domain name registration, you're always going to be collecting a significant amount of personal information. You need to know who's registered the domain, who owns it, what their address is, what their where they live, how they can be contacted. You will always be collecting that. ICANN is collecting it for purposes of maintaining a domain name registration and those related functions of registrars and registries. And there, law enforcement will always be able to request that data under their law for legitimate purposes. There's no way that ICANN can just say, ICANN can say we don't have the data you're requesting. For example, I assume none of us want ICANN to be collecting our Social Security numbers as Americans or our national identity card number or Aadhaar number if you're an Indian citizen. I think we'd all view that as kind of creepy, wouldn't we? I hope. But that, in fact, would greatly facilitate law enforcement if they did that, right? So it's a very simple line, is ICANN will collect a bunch of data for its own purposes. Law enforcement will issue subpoenas or have some kind of an access mechanism that, when they have a legitimate purpose, gives them access to it. But ICANN's purpose is not to be law enforcement on the Internet. That's not the reason it collects the data it collects. To me, this is very obvious and simple, and I don't think it should be construed as me or anyone saying that law enforcement will never have access to the data that they need to solve crimes. I mean, I have a privacy right in my home not to be searched, but if the government gets a warrant because they have reason to think I'm a criminal, they can come into my home and search it. So that's all I'm saying here.
All right, thank you. So I want to draw the line under Aiden for just a second and take back control of the mic because I want to try to propose a couple of things to move forward. But, Kavus, can you, since you've already spoke once, could you keep your comment brief?
Yes, I keep my comment brief. In paragraph 4.3, it is mentioned several cases which is considered as to be legitimate and proportionate, and all of them, there is no criteria what is legitimate, what is the proportionate. Under that, people may ask any question, and I have some difficulty to transfer to the third party without knowing that the purpose of that. This purpose is just subjective, so we need to be have the criteria. Thank you.
Yeah, there's the rub, right, Kavus? Aiden?
Thanks very much, Kurt. This is Aiden, and hi, everyone. So I just wanted to make a very brief comment, drawing attention to one of the elements in our charter where it indicates that basic training and the principles of data protection law may be required. And I just wanted to flag this now based on some of the questions that are being raised on today's call around how, for instance, the legitimate purpose is determined, that I think it would be helpful if this training could be made available for members of the EPDP very soon. As I think we're not all on the same page with the definitions that exist in the GDPR, and while, yes, some are a matter of interpretation, others are very well defined. So this was something that the GNSSOC Council, when there were discussions around initiating the EPDP, did talk about, and there was a feeling that if it would be helpful, then to have a basic baseline of knowledge and terminology, then training may need to be provided. So just putting it out there. And also I wanted to endorse the earlier comments by Milton and Stephanie and Colin and Chad and to sort of reemphasize what we wrote in our survey response. That is, while yes, ICANN does have a responsibility as the coordinator of the domain name system to facilitate the actions, values, quality of, say, delivering security, these are goals and not purposes of processing. So just wanted to reemphasize that, and I'll leave my comments there. Thanks.
Thanks. I have two comments. One is just putting ICANN aside for a minute. We're the multi-stakeholder model, and we're the ones sitting in the room, you know, representing our different interests. And when we leave from this room, law enforcement will make requests from registrars for data and maybe registries. And you know, businesses, trademark owners will make the same claim. Those who do genuine statistical security studies will be requesting data too. So it's for us. So the purpose of us working together isn't to work under some validating empowerment of ICANN, but it's rather to work out mechanisms where these legitimate purposes that meet the threshold of not overcoming some individual's privacy right, that those are accommodated, and they're accommodated in a economical standard, expected, transparent way. So to me, you know, sort of regardless of where the temporary specification, I can say they derive the power for creating this. You know, the temporary specification is here, And in the future, there will be requests for data. And it's since we had this multi-stakeholder model, so I think it's for us to work out how we're going to manage that. So, you know, agreeing with Milton that it's governed by, you know, the existing law and our existing need and what real purposes are. And you know, going back to James' very first comment that we need to find then a way to evaluate these different purposes and decide how we're going to accommodate them. And that's why, you know, that's why some of the comments and that I included in this this sort of high-level summary of the comments say, let's work on those purposes and the mechanisms for which data is given, and then, you know, then we'll find the, you know, the debate about ICANN's role, which it, to me is sort of a side issue, it becomes sort of moot. And so my second comment is to really focus us back on, you know, these first two issue summaries in my, for 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, and to go ahead with them tentatively as is. Everybody will get another bite at the apple, or should we mark them up somehow? So I want to just kind of focus on that and then try to go on to one more section before we close for the night. Alan?
Thank you. I have a question, not a statement. ICANN has repeatedly been told by the data commissioners they have not made a sufficiently robust a legal argument for why the data should be collected, never mind processed by us. But is ICANN and the board, ICANN org and the board simply sitting back and hoping we're going to build that argument, or is there an effort going on within ICANN to try to address that? If there is, I really think we should understand what's going on and what the time frame is, because that's absolutely crucial to our doing our work. And presuming an EPDP is going to build a legal argument, I think is a false hope. Thank you.
So I don't. I'm thinking about the best way that we should probably make a request of ICANN to see if there is a roadmap for their planned ongoing discussions with privacy authorities and the like. Benedict?
Hey. My concern is a little bit, and this is speaking more as a former law enforcement officer, and the European one. So we have a balance of privacy and sort of law enforcement interests in speaking here. The conversation has very much unfolded so far along the lines of, well, it's kind of easy. If ICANN doesn't, you know, if ICANN agrees that collection carries on but there's no access in general, then law enforcement has due process to obtain this information. And that is absolutely true. But the truth is that outside the US, that due process, and I make no apologies for this, it is fundamentally broken. We rely on physical letters that are carried from a law enforcement officer to their central unit, put in a diplomatic bag, physically printed out, authorized by a judge, taken to another country, often the US, viewed by a judge there, and acted upon. That process can take, in my experience, anywhere upwards of 3, 6, 9, or even 12 months to take place. Now, I know our purpose here is not to replace WHOIS with an identical version, but please be careful when we are still trying to preserve the security and stability of the internet of sort of glibly saying, well, there are other mechanisms, because those mechanisms don't work terribly well. And that's possibly our fault, but nonetheless, that's the case. Thank you.
Thanks, Benedict. There's one question I want to address in the chat. It's Cavusis that says, what's the threshold I was talking about? And, you know, the temporary spec says in 4.4, and it says, it's said many, many times that you know, the basis of a legitimate interest, then the threshold is not overridden by fundamental rights and freedoms of individuals whose personal data is included in registration data. So I would say this as sort of a two-step process, listing the legitimate purposes and then determining, you know, which ones were not overridden by the fundamental rights defined by the GDPR. So I freely admit that I'm terrible at keeping up with the chat and trying to think at the same time. So there's been a couple of questions in the chat to ICANN staff and board members. If anybody wants to raise their hand from there, they can. And if not, we'll capture the questions and pass them on. So I'll just ask. So to me, we're deep into the discussion that happens after this triage discussion. And to me, I want to move on to the next couple of sections and say for 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3, that slide that's up in front of you, that these will be the preliminary issue summaries in a triage report that'll be sent to all of you, you know, for review and comment before it goes out. All right, in the next sections, 4.4, 4.41 and 4.42, Christina, do you want to talk?
Yes, Christina Rosette for the transcript. Just a clarifying question. If we do not believe, if we do not believe that the issue summarization text is necessarily complete, how do you want us to address that? Do you all want red lines? Do you want us to just flag it now and note that there will be suggested changes coming? Because I think that's really what we're trying to determine at this point, right? That is the issue summarization that's in this chart, and the consensus level percentages, are those sufficiently accurate that they can be provided to the council?
Right. So that's what we're trying to do. If you, admittedly, this is very short notice, so you may or may not have a specific view and or suggestion now. And if you do, that would be appreciated. And, you know, I'll leave it for, you know, Caitlin and Marika and Barry, but you know, an email discussion or an email suggestion to the group about a markup, I think, would be the best way, unless they have another tool. So if you want to follow up with a suggestion or a comment, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have one, Christina?
Not off the top of my head, and that I want to put forward without talking with my other RYSG colleagues.
I think
we will probably have some suggestions.
Okay. And right, you know, I hope that in reading these, it comes across that I'm just trying to identify issues where there's differences of opinion or where additional information is required or there's a request for additional information, that sort of thing. And it's not an advocative issue summary in any way. So in the first two sections that specify actual use of data, 4.1 and 4.2, there are suggestions that I've kind of missed the point I wanted to make, but anyway, in those two sections, first there's been a suggestion that law enforcement needn't pass this balancing, that data can be disclosed when so the balancing or the threshold is a legitimate interest not overridden by fundamental rights. So there was a comment that LEA, law enforcement, does not have to meet that standard, according to Article 6 of the GDPR. So I don't know if I want to debate that here, but I wanted to flag it for the GNSO that this is an area where one of the groups differs from what's written in the spec. And then there was a gap concern, and I think it was by others, but you know that where 4.4 says that this list of purposes are the only list, or it's restricted. It says and only registration data and only for the following legitimate purposes. And the GAC and others have flagged that things could change and there could be other legitimate purposes. So we should change that. And third is that the specification should also take into account that other privacy regimes are in place. And I think Cavus brought that up before, that we'll have to address other privacy regimes as we go on. And then in 4.4.2, to me, that 4.4.2 is sort of a catch-all provision. It's anything that is a legitimate interest that is not outweighed by the fundamental rights of individuals. So in a way, to me, 4.4.2 addresses the GAC concern that that the spec limits the number of legitimate purposes, because 4.4.2 is this catch-all sort of catch-all broad sort of thing that says if you meet this test, then it's an allowable purpose. I think it's probably that I think the GAC and others who made the suggestion, their suggestion is a little more eloquent, that you know, it be addressed in the preamble that there be other purposes rather than to put a catch-all. Nonetheless, this is how the issues in these two sections have been addressed from reading your comments. And so to the extent we can just focus on whether that captures this or not, it would be appreciated. So what do you think, Alex?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. It's Alex. As we commented on this, I just wanted to chime in here really quick. I haven't had a chance to study the issue summarization, but I think it's important just to kind of reiterate what we our concern of on Section 4.4, the preamble to all of these, which is essentially that this balancing test is important. But there are some types of processing that fall outside the scope and are not subject to this balancing test. So I think it's important, especially law enforcement and the like. So when we talk about the need to do this important balancing test, we should make sure we understand that it's not always the case that it's required, depending on the access and who's involved. So I'll study the issue summarization and see if it addresses our concern, but I just wanted to chime in real quick.
Thanks, Alex. Chris?
Thanks, Kurt. It's Chris Lissevens for the record. Just to answer your question on whether we think 4.4.2 cures the only problem, personally, I don't think it does, but I've not had a chance to obviously speak to everyone else, obviously saw this an hour ago or so. But obviously, a legitimate interest is just one of the legal bases under GDPR. You know, there's five others. And that's then tied to GDPR. And obviously, if there are other data protection things that we're not gathering at the moment that we might have to think of in different national jurisdictions, then you know, that won't be covered by 4.4.1 to 13. Thanks.
Yep, thank you, Chris. And I just want to say that I don't think we need to answer that question right away. I just want to flag it for the triage report, and then, you know, when we write the initial report and reform this somewhat, then you'll have had the time to decide how best that should be put to cure the problem that you've raised. So if there's no more comments about this section, I'm going to go on to the next one. But I want to pause and say, as we're having this discussion and to the extent to which we're discussing these issue summaries and also dipping our toe in the water of the substantive discussion, I think the best path forward is we can create what we think would be the triage report on these sections as we march through them, as on these sections that we've reviewed. And so you can look and see what the triage report would look like. And then, you know, I think it'd be easier to opine on whether the summaries are adequate or not. Milton, do you want to take yourself off mute and go ahead?
Yes, thank you. So I think right in the lower right corner of the Adobe Connect file, you have 4.1 and 4.4.2 right next to each other. And I think this is a good example of what our concerns are. So 4.4.1 is perfectly fine, in our opinion. We have to collect this data about the registrant in order to make sure that the registrant actually owns the domain and can exercise their rights in respect to the registered name. There's no way to do that without collecting the personal data. 4.2 is a really weird construct. They're saying essentially the purpose of ICANN's collection of this data is to provide access to it in an accurate, reliable, and uniform registration data. And there's something tautological or circular about saying the purpose of collecting data is to provide access to it. That doesn't tell you what you need the data to do. And the reason we greatly dislike 4.4.2 and anything like it is it seems to say that we're just opening the door to anybody who wants the data to get it, as long as it's some kind of legitimate interest, not outweighed by the fundamental rights of relevant data subjects. So essentially, you're begging the entire question here. You're saying, we'll provide access to anything and everything as long as it's legal. But again, ICANN is in no position to determine what is legal. It's the GDPR and other privacy laws that determine what's legal. So why is this even in here?
So my opinion, then, it's only that is to do the thing that, you know, the GAC and others suggested, and that is it. Rather, in the preamble, say there might be other, as the rulings on the law evolve and the Internet evolves and the DNS evolves, there might be other legitimate uses for this data, and so we have to recognize that this list might change. And in my opinion, that's what this number two provides for. It opens the door to say, you know, if you pass the GDPR test, you can add a use of data to this list. And I agree. I think I agree that there's a better way to do that. But James said he disagreed. So can I hear from James first on why he disagrees with Milton, and then we'll go to Margie? Margie, were you going to respond to Milton or say something independent?
Yeah, I was going to respond to Milton.
All right, go ahead.
What we're missing here is that the WHOIS system, or the registration directory system, serves a public interest that ICANN is essentially supporting in this process. And so I think it's a mistake to try to take out 4.4.2 if that's the intent of Milton's comment. And I think that throughout the temporary specification and the new policy, we need to recognize the public interest served by the directory.
So what do you see as the purpose of that paragraph 4.4.2, Margie? I think you answered it, but I didn't quite grasp it.
Right, and I think it's not actually trying to spell out each and every legitimate interest that's consistent with GDPR. Although, you know, we could certainly do that. There's a lot of preambles, a lot of language in the GDPR that talks about different legitimate interests. But really, as a whole, when you step back, we're talking about ICANN's role in the public interest as it creates the policy that supports this directory service.
Okay. Thank you. Benedict?
I'm confused about some of the responses we're hearing here. My understanding of legitimate interest means legitimate interest of the processor. That's what the law says, and possibly third parties impacted. It does not mean, as per some of the responses, the legitimate interest of those who seek to access the data. Have I made a mistake, or is that everybody's understanding? So I think it's a really important point to get right.
We're getting lots of support in the chat room.
Well, this looks like consensus.
James?
Hi, Kurt. James speaking for the record. And I actually want to agree with Margie and I believe disagree with one part of Milton's comment where at the end, and if I heard him correctly, and if I didn't, please let me know, is that he said that that we need to collect this RDS data in order to establish the rights of the registrant and the control over the domain name. And I just want to point out, again, that collection of RDS data, location of RDS data, as to Margie's point, is something that is done in the public interest and is not necessary for registrars to communicate with their customers. We have other data that we collect, you know, billing and account level data that may differ from the data that's collected for the purposes of RDS. And so I think my point was to Milton's comment is that it's not necessary for us, in our view, to establish those rights and that control. This data is collected over and above data we already have, and it may be different and it may be extraneous. Thanks.
Milton? Thanks, James.
Yeah, James, I think you're kind of getting lost in the weeds here. You tell me how you establish rights of ownership or a domain name registration without knowing the name or the address of the name holder. You're telling me that you don't need their credit card data to establish their rights in it. Now, clearly, and thankfully, we're not talking about putting credit card data in the WHOIS record, but ultimately the directory is necessary to establish the registrant's rights and the domain names, and that the fact that it's a public directory helps do that, and that's a legitimate and unassailable reason for ICANN to be collecting that information or to be requiring that information to be collected by registrars and put into the WHOIS. I think you're kind of distracting us from the main point here, which is that there are all kinds of third-party interests, as Benedict said, that are not related to the domain name registration process, and that we have to clearly distinguish between what ICANN requires and what ICANN needs for its registrars and registries and what these third-party interests are. That's all I'm saying.
James, did you want to come back to that?
Sure. Kurt, you can actually move on to Alex here. Milton, I think we're talking past each other a little bit here. We're talking about collection of data for the purposes of publication in an RDS system or an online directory, and that is, again, not something that we need to do in order to serve our customer, our registrant customers. That is something, as Margie indicated, is something that we do in the public interest. And so we're saying that establishing who controls a domain name is in the public interest, and therefore we're collecting it for that purpose, then I think we can have that conversation. But I think your statement was that it's necessary for us in order to establish that customer relationship, and I'm saying that no, it's not. We have our own internal communications with those customers.
Yeah, I think we are talking past each other because there is no public interest definition of ICANN's maintenance of a directory service in its core mission, and as somebody who has 30 years of experience in telecommunications regulation under a public interest standard, I think you really got to move away from that claim as fast as you can. But we can take that offline.
Alex?
Thanks, Kurt. I just wanted to, this is Alex. I just wanted to comment again on this concept of legitimate interests and that, the lawfulness of processing is based on the legitimate interest of only the controller. I don't think that's the case unless I misunderstood the previous discussion. I just wanted to reference GDPR Article 6, 1F, which says processing is necessary for the purpose of the legitimate interest pursued by the controller or by a third party, except where such interests are overridden by the interests or fundamental rights and freedoms of the data subject, et cetera. So I think it's important to note that third parties are considered in the GDPR, specifically in that Article 6, 1F. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex. Does anyone have any more comments on these issue summaries the way they're written? I've already captured one comment that would amend this, but just wanted to pause for a second. And then I think I'll go on to the next ones, but plan to end the call in the next 5 or 10 minutes or so. With the idea that we'll finish this set in the next meeting and then go on from there. So I have to, Caboose, do you want to speak?
Yes, Kurt, I tried not to raise the hand. I put many of the comments in the chat. I hope and expect that everybody does the same, not frequently and consistently asking for the hand, raise the hand. Please kindly consider my earlier question. I have problem with what is legitimate purpose, what is legitimate rights, and so on and so forth. I need some criteria definition for that. That is fundamental for me. Thank you.
Yep, I agree, and that's what we'll develop, I think, or have delivered to us for the substantive discussion that follows this triage report. Stephanie?
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I think that my comment relates to the remark about how in the temp spec the registrars may also comply with other data protection law as it suits for commercial purpose where commercially necessary or whatever. I thought I saw it on the slide, which is why I'm raising it. It's sort of a fundamental question. How far can this
exercise as an EPDP goal. I can understand why in a temp spec ICANN made a decision to say, yes, registrars, you can go ahead and attempt to comply with other law, although we are only focused on the one that is going to cost money at the moment. But it does seem nonsensical to allow that as a sort of where commercially feasible. It implies that we're only complying with laws where we're likely to have expensive enforcement. You know, it's a bit like speeding on country roads. Go ahead, kill yourself, 140. Nobody's going to catch you, right? This doesn't seem like something we would want to emit as a final policy. So I'm just wondering what your proposal is for how we deal with that.
Well, Stephanie, I'm looking anxiously at the chat to see if someone has a good proposal for that. You know, I understand your concern, which is valid because, you know, everybody here, well, many here operate, you know, businesses that reach all areas of the all countries of the globe, and the environment is becoming more and more complex. So I think, like Aidan said, I think that was a very good comment.
Well, so, can I answer my own question, Kurt?
Terrific.
I think that the situation could be remedied by changing this to, and I don't have language drafted, but basically to a statement that says, since GDPR appears to be leading the world in data protection as a model, contracted parties should comply with the GDPR in other jurisdictions as required. The as required would allow them to opt out in cases where there is no data protection law nor any sign of it coming, because I realize we can't ask people to comply with a law that doesn't apply, but it solves that problem because there's no doubt the GDPR is the world leader at the moment. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. James?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. James speaking. And to Stephanie's last point, there are a number of national privacy laws either proposed or in the works or being adopted. I don't know that we can predict where the landscape is. I think there's even talk that maybe it might even come up in the U.S. So we're going to have to treat that, I think, as a known unknown. And assume, as part of our work, that the future laws will either be mostly or entirely compatible with GDPR, or that the service providers will have the ability to, in their own discretion, essentially say that the temporary spec and presumably GDPR are sufficiently different from their national applicable law that they need some sort of relief from that. And I think we have an existing process at ICANN that would apply there. So I just want to highlight what Stephanie is saying. I'm concerned that there's this universe of new legislation that hasn't dropped yet, and that we have to kind of future-proof our work to account for that. But we can't know what those are going to look like at this time.
Thanks, James. Yeah, in California, there'll be a GDPR-like measure on our ballot where the Californians approve measures by ballot rather than by legislature. And so that's one example of that. Okay, I just want to here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to touch on these last four so you're exposed to them, and then give a couple minutes for comment, and then wrap the meeting. So among these purposes in 4.4.3 is to enable a reliable mechanism for identifying and contacting registered name holders for a variety of legitimate purposes more fully set out below. So it's kind of strange because 4.4.3 seems to be a header for the next four sections because they all have to do with registrants. And so 4.4.4 says, enabling a mechanism for the communication and notification of payment invoicing information and reminders by its chosen registrar. So this is that's a section that drew strong support across most of the stakeholder groups, but the registrars raised their hand and said, you know, we really don't use registration data for this purpose at all. We use this other box where, you know, people put in their, the buyer puts in their address and credit card information and the like. So it's one of those instances where I think that we should look at the vote of one as maybe informing us a little better. And that's what I put as the issue summary. And then similarly in 4.5, it's a mechanism for communication or notification to the registered name holder for technical issues or errors with a domain name or any content or resources associated with the name. So as is typical, the word content was raised here, and so I flagged it as an issue. And then, again, the registrars may or may not use WHOIS data for some of these purposes. And also say that content may be a reason why law enforcement comes in and decides to take action against the website. So even though we're saying ICANN's not a content, we don't want ICANN to be a content regulator, content could still be a reason for having to reach the domain holder. And 4.4.6, enabling a mechanism for the registrar operator or the chosen registrar to communicate with the registered name holder on commercial or technical changes. And, I would look for the registrars to explain to us the role of registration data versus the role of other data they collect in this role. And what's not on this page is the last one, enabling the publication of technical and administrative points of contact of the registered holder if they so desire. It's voluntary. So these are, you know, these are how I captured the issues here. And what I'm going to give a couple, we're going to have like 3 minutes for comment if anybody wants to comment on any of these. But what we'll, I'm feeling sure that the next step is to take the issue summaries on this page, all the work you've done in your commenting and the yes or no indications you've given and craft that into the first draft of a triage report so we can see what that looks like while we march down the path. Does anybody have any comments on these issue summaries? Emily, how are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Okay, thank you. Just a very short point. It sort of picks up some of the issues raised in the chat by various people. Is that, and as a general point, the temporary specification doesn't really adequately differentiate between collection, publication, and access. And each of those processes need to be justified and compliant with GDPR. I think sometimes, I think that sort of blurriness is confusing a lot of us as we're trying to address the issue. I think that it's hard to know what precise amendments to propose to the temporary specification, because I think it's actually at the level of principles that doesn't seem to quite reflected in the draft. Another very important point, which I think is speaks to the contracted parties, is about necessity of data processing. We had a little chat about collection of registration data, and that, you know, collection is there are scenarios where it's necessary to collect registration data to fulfill the contract, but it's not necessary to publish and it may not be necessary to grant access. So that's just one illustration of how, if you actually work through the GDPR steps on each of these processes, you might come to different answers and a bit more nuance than we currently have in the temporary specification. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. That was really good. And the three categories you mentioned are collection, use, and disclosure. Were those the three?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay,
but I think that it's the sort of thinking through each of the processing steps as you have to think through the entire sort of life cycle in a way. Retention, I think the point Stephanie was raising on the chat, retention is an issue. That's, of course, a very complex one in European case law because you have conflicting legal obligations. And, in fact, that the Data Retention Directive was ruled to be invalid several years ago. So I don't want to kind of throw up too much dust in everybody's eyes, but it's just a suggestion that might help to clarify our thinking and maybe an exercise that we could undertake at some point. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks, Emily. And earlier we talked about creating, you know, a list of the data and how it's used. So what data is necessary for a domain name registration, you know, as opposed to what data, you know, might be necessary to others. And then it could be sort of a matrix, you know, as to whether, you know, how the collection use and disclosure goes and retention. So I think there's some sort of table that could inform our discussion there. Esteban? Esteban's on mute.
Some of the specifications in some way is very general in this term, and that is why it needs more precision, because there is a lot of issues as we was talking before and discussing before that needs a definition. And for example, one of these cases
Esteban, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Because you were muted for some reason, we missed the first part of what you said. So could you start over? And also, I think you're not quite as loud as you'd like to be. So if you could get a little closer to the microphone or talk more loudly, that would be great, too.
I am Esteban Lizano for the record, and I was following the discussion.
So, Esteban, I'm really sorry to interrupt you. We're having there's a lot of background noise and also interference on the line, so you might have to either call in or write up your comment.
Okay, sorry.
Perfect. Yeah, there we
go. Okay. I think that was a problem with the microphone.
Okay.
I was telling that from the ISPCP, we present our general comments, and maybe the just to summarize is that many of the words and the terms used in the temporary specification and are very wide and need more clarification and more precision. And as for example, this issue about the which is the legitimate interest that allows the data treatment. And with this, in the same line, we want to consider that, for example, in the point 4.5, there is a reference to content that we have to be very careful, because we know ICANN does not regulate content. And then, we are very worried because we understand that some of the words that are in the temporary specification needs more clarification just to not create, for example, responsibilities that exceed the ICANN mission or the ICANN role.
Thanks, Esteban. I'm glad we took the time to capture that. So I think that might be a question, one of, I don't know if we phrase these as legal questions or formation questions or what, but a question would be why did, knowing the term content always raises red flags, there must be some specific purpose or idea in mind when that term was included in the temporary specification. So Marika and Co., if we could capture that question as part of our list to send on, I think it'd be good. Okay, so we're wrapping up. So, Cavus, go ahead. Thanks, Esteban.
My question is twofold. One, in 443, we are talking of a reliable mechanism. Then we go to 444 and 445 and 446. We are talking of mechanisms, but not mentioning reliable. Yesterday, in our small group, there was mention or suggestion to delete the word or the term reliable. I did not agree with that. We retained that with the view that we have to define what you mean by reliable, who and how the reliability is defined, from what aspects, from endurance, from preciseness, from what. I put in the chat my comment. Please have a look at that. And thank you.
Okay. See, that's the problem with using adjectives in these things. They're hard to define. So, Cavus, you said you are for retaining that word reliable in there, though, right?
Yes, I wish to maintain the word reliable, but I wonder why in the remaining two or three paragraphs there is no reliable. They say mechanism. Does not talk about reliability. Why?
I understand.
Not that. And then what is reliable? Thank you.
Yep, I got it. Thank you very much. Benedict, last comment of the day?
Oh, God. It was a small it was a small thing. I'll leave this British accent ringing in your ears. ESSAC feels that content should stay in 445. The reason for that is that it's one of the oldest reasons for who is information, which is if your domain name has got infected, you're a victim of crime. It might be spewing pollution out across the internet, classically a kind of compromised WordPress installation or something like that. Your domain name is spewing out spam at the rates of millions of emails. It's really great to be able to contact you with regards to that content. We're not talking about, I think the intent was not to talk about offensive content or infringing content, but the sort of content of a website that can be harmful to others, if that helps define that purpose.
Yeah, so I think that would be a good clarification for this section. So, see, it was a really good comment. Let me wrap this up. How many? So we just missed eight of those, and then we'll finish. So I'd appreciate hearing from you either right now, but after the meeting, how we can best conduct these in a way to, you know, get through this triage period where we, you know, sort of settle on the issue summarizations. If you want, we could sort of, you know, rely on me to do them and then just plop them in front of you and you could review the document. But I kind of think this discussion is a good capturing of the rationale and thinking behind each group. So, you know, we're going to finish the rest of the surveys and then assemble that material and plug through a discussion of the rest, unless I hear something, hear a better idea, and better ideas might be easier to come by. So to reiterate what we told Cavus earlier, the next meeting is Thursday, August 8th at 1300 UTC, and part two of the surveys are due Friday,
essentially at the close of business wherever you are. And unless there's any more comments, I'm going to close the meeting and thank everybody again for the thoughtfulness and alacrity with which they prepared their surveys. I found the comments very insightful, and they'll serve to create our triage report so we can dump that over the side and then go on to the next thing. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a great day and night.
Thanks, Kat.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Operator Tony, if you could please disconnect all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.